Welcome to Vistage Live, the place you can come to for insights, knowledge and perspectives from a range of experts who can help your small and mid-sized business make a great big impact. My guest today is Rob Rastagno, who's the President of International Operations for Vistage Worldwide, a globally minded executive who is known for transforming middle market companies and unlocking their next phase of growth. So with a career that began at McKinsey and that spans over 25 years, Rob has scaled four private equity-backed businesses in the learning, training and professional development sector. He's a subject matter expert on subscription and membership models, so much so he literally wrote the book on it. From driving enterprise value through data-driven go-to-market strategies to leading global teams across six continents, Rob brings a rare blend of strategic vision and hands-on execution, and we're going to get to that. In this episode, we'll hear the insights behind his leadership journey, the lessons from reinvigorating brands, and what it really takes to create value in fast-moving markets. Rob Rastagno, welcome to Vistage Live.
Thank you, Stephanie. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. So it's not in your bio, and it may or may not be the most interesting thing about you, but tell us about your career as a drive time host.
back in the day, really was always into radio and just got a gig in the 90s, so a lot of good 90s rock music.
Yeah.
Always liked having the callers call in, making their requests, dedicating their songs.
Yeah.
And you can't go wrong with a good competition to win a free sandwich from the local submarine shop.
And what was your time slot?
3 to 6 in the afternoon.
So how did you get the gig?
Just auditioned and it worked out. You know, just something I've always been interested in and yeah.
Was it scripted? So, you know, you've got calls and you've got your playlist planned. And so do you know what you're going to say in a gig like that?
It's all ad-lib. The only thing that was planned is that the type of song was scheduled throughout the hour.
Right.
So we had to play, you know, one from the early 90s, one from late 90s. You know, yeah. So we had a programming wheel and we had to live, the music had to match the programming wheel. But what you said was completely
right.
Unscripted.
And did you get to the point of paid ads? People were paying you to do their ads?
Yeah, we did. We had a advertising sales team and we'd have to come up with the ads and shoot the ads.
Love it. Yeah. So 90s rock, what are your top picks for 90s rock? What would be your recommendations?
Well, you know, being an American, you can't go wrong with Dave Matthews Band or Alanis Morissette. I think those are the two.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. Well, great. So that's it now. That's all we really need to talk about today. Let's get then to, I'm trying to think where to start. I'm really interested, and I know it firsthand, your view on strategy and execution. Hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think you hear all the cliches about strategy without execution is nothing, or strategy without culture is nothing, or culture needs strategy, whatever. Yeah. I can keep going with the cliches. But I think the key thing is keep the strategy simple.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work to keep it simple. Simple but not easy to do it. But if you can get the team focused on a small number of really important things, that makes the execution possible and successful.
How do you get to that small number of really important things?
Mm. As a leader of the business, you really have to understand the key drivers of your business. What are the 5, 6, 7 things that really drive your business?
Yeah.
And that's not something you can just figure out in a 15-minute brainstorming session. It's something you really think about, really understand your business, understand what makes you profitable, what makes you grow, what makes you different from the competitors in the market. So on the Vistage side, for example, some of the key drivers of our business are finding new chairs. These are the executive coaches that, of course, are running the groups. Make those chairs successful in building their initial book of business and then making sure that their members are having such a great experience that that they don't want to go anywhere. So we keep the groups full and it's easier for our chairs to keep building their practice. So if you can get those three things right, there's a lot of details behind that, you know, with events and marketing and operations. There's a lot to get right. But if you can stay focused on those key drivers of the business, it helps align the team, making execution that much more seamless.
So you've just said the word focus. Mm. And I know we've had conversations where you've talked about focus versus distraction.
Mm.
What about, you know, because the Vistage model, as you've described it, is quite straightforward. Mm.
What about in a more complex business that you've gone into or you've been leading where you've had to identify the drivers? Can you talk us through perhaps a more rigorous process you've had to go to work out, well, what actually are the levers for this business?
Yeah. So what comes to mind is having a really good person in the finance and accounting team by your side to help you work it out. I would recommend doing some sort of sensitivity analysis, meaning if you go up and down all the things that affect your business, pricing, product mix, number of employees, investment in marketing, if you go up and down that and you build some sensitivity, what if we did 10% more on pricing? What if we did 10% more on number of customers? What if we did 10% more on average deal size? What if we got a little bit more efficient with our marketing? Really get a feel for the sensitivity of all the drivers of your business. And therefore, you can pick the ones that really move the needle. So how we discovered retention being a very important metric for Vistage is if you look at what a point of retention does to the top and bottom line, it's a pretty big number.
Yeah.
And that's why it's such an important variable to focus on.
Yeah, right. Okay. So sensitivity analysis, that makes sense. What else would you do?
Yeah. I would think about the drivers behind the drivers. So at McKinsey, we learned the fishbone method for breaking down the problem. So think about revenue is not just revenue. Revenue is price times volume. And volume is just not volume. Volume is number of customers times products per transaction. And you know, you keep breaking it down. And you might find that there's something, the third, fourth, fifth branch, that is something that doesn't get enough attention, but it's really a driver. And if you get that right, it flows through and it gets your revenue right. And that's when you know it's something to focus on.
Really interesting. So when, you know, back in your McKinsey days and what you've done with your own business and other businesses and now being part of a international global business, are you always following a similar model? Do you have the model playing in your head when you're developing strategy and then the planning for execution? Are you kind of playing out a model, or do you go into a situation with the business and you're just using your skills to think, how am I going to problem solve here? Yeah. Which way are you going?
Yeah, I'm always looking, I guess, the model, closer to the model. I'm always looking for the 3, 4, 5 leverage points, the 3 to 5 things that will make a difference for the business. And it's not something that you can figure out in an hour or a day or a week. It takes time. And over time, you might realize that you can improve what those, let's say, 5 things are. It's just figure out what really drives the business and figure out how you can get the team aligned on figuring out what it takes to drive those 5 different things. And also know that you don't necessarily have all the answers. So if one of the levers, you might have to do a little bit of experimentation to figure out what it's going to take to
scientific. To move that. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark Bregman talks about that, one of our chairs. They're taking a scientific approach, not always an engineering approach.
That's right. Yeah. If you have a hypothesis as to what might improve something like average number of items per order, go try some of the things and see if your hypothesis is right or not.
Yeah. It's really interesting. So applying that then to your current world that you're managing an international business, how many in the team and how many customers or members do you have currently in your sphere?
In Vistage International? We're about 200 employees total. We have about 700 chairs. These are executive coaches. And we have around 25,000 members worldwide outside of the US.
So that's a significant business that you're leading.
Yeah.
So what is it that you're picking up then around? Let's start with, you know, that's multi-cultural. So tell us, what are the areas that you run?
So we have different entities across the world for Vistage. We have wholly owned subsidiaries, like Australia and New Zealand. We have around 25 licensees who are entrepreneurs in their local market that are building a business around Vistage in their local market. And then we have a sister brand called EGN, which was an acquisition we did in 2022. Same but different. Similar model with coaches, chairing, peer groups.
Yeah.
That they have slightly different business model, but same heart, same
mission. And that's in Europe.
And that's in Copenhagen.
So of all those different, you know, quite diverse regions, and you've said 20-something thousand plus members, most of them, CEOs, business leaders. What's the difference in issues that they're facing at the moment?
Yeah, the one thing that always surprises me when I travel around the world is that CEOs face the same problems everywhere in the world. So there's lots of different cultures,
Yeah.
But cultural differences are mainly around things like communication or how they build relationships or how you make decisions. But the actual problems are pretty constant across the world.
And what are they? What kind of things?
Things like feeling lonely at the top where you don't have someone else to talk to. Things like feeling like you're stuck in the weeds and you need to take an opportunity to step out of the weeds and think about where am I going? What's my vision? What's my strategy? Always issues around HR, I would call.
I was going to say like people, talent, people issues, having talent, the right people.
Having the right people. And yeah, those are things that always come to the top of
growth.
The list. Growth. Yeah, everyone wants to grow. Everyone wants to become more profitable. Everyone wants to know how to exit their business. But it's really the emotional and the people needs that are seen very constant across cultures.
And does that change culturally, I guess? It must change how people are managing, how they manage their people. Is that, do you see different leadership styles?
Yeah, the main differences I see are around how decisions are made and then what the communication style is.
Mm.
So how decisions are made, is it more top-down, more consensus-driven? Is leadership more hierarchical or flat? So there's some differences there that you have to be sensitive to. The issues they're facing are the same, but how you make a decision and motivate the team is different in different cultures.
So what about you leading a business with all these different cultures? How do you manage that adjustment?
Yeah, I think the main thing is to acknowledge that there's a difference, acknowledge that we're a global team, and inspire the local leaders to translate our global strategy, our global mission, our global vision into something that resonates locally. So don't use local culture as an excuse. Oh, we can't do that because it doesn't work in our country.
Yeah.
Instead, figure out a way, understand the strategy, understand where we're going, and figure out a way to have it work in your market through maybe a different way to communicate it, a different way to get buy-in on it. But one thing I found is a good business idea is a good business idea anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
How you implement it has to be sensitive to local customs.
Yeah, right. What have you learned? I know that you've lived overseas. I know that you've had international roles before. But in your current role, as you evolve as a leader, because we always do, what have you learned about managing international teams? What have you learned about yourself as a leader?
What have I learned? I think no matter what culture you're in, starting with building a relationship is really important.
Mm.
And that sets the foundation for trust and gives you a little bit of forgiveness if you make a little bit of a social faux pas.
Nice. Interesting. Yeah. Trust is the foundation of it all.
Mm.
But isn't that interesting? What's the, we've talked here about the equation of trust and the theory of trust.
Yeah.
What creates trust, do you think?
It could be a little bit different in different cultures. Mm. So in some cultures, it's a lot more transactional, how you build trust.
Yeah.
So working on a project together, showing that you can add value, be helpful in solving the problem together, getting some results together, and showing that you're in it together and you have aligned business interests.
Yes.
On the other end of the spectrum is more of a relationship-based trust. So it's getting to know about each other personally, about families, about aspirations, about interests, hobbies, going out to dinner, breaking bread together. So and of course it's a spectrum, so it's often somewhere in between.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, just when you think about all the different countries that you're involved in, there are trust is still the core of it, but as you say, it's gained differently.
Exactly.
So you've talked about CEOs having similar issues all around the world at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've talked about on Vistage Live a lot over the years, but VUCA.
Mm.
How's that, it is VUCA.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's sort of the first thing I get cornered whenever I land somewhere about, hey, what's going on with all this volatility? And the good news is the one constant, another constant around the world is that the only way to manage through VUCA is strong leadership.
Yes.
And the Institute for the Future came up with a framework that I really like to use.
Mm.
It's also VUCA, but it's what you can do as a leader to combat the volatility, uncertainty, yep. complexity, ambiguity. Yep. So for volatility, it's all about vision.
Right.
So can you set the North Star?
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that your team is aware of the vision and all decisions. Volatility comes from things changing really rapidly. It's the pace of change is what causes volatility.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to be tempted to change a lot because a lot of different things are being thrown at us.
Yes.
But the first question is, how does this align with our vision? Is this do we need a change because we're off course to our vision or not? So that's the V.
It's really good. Mm.
For you, uncertainty, that's when nothing seems predictable. And the antidote to that is understanding. So gathering information, seeking different perspectives, planning for different scenarios, asking a lot of questions, that's really what gets rewarded. Companies in a VUCA environment, the ones that can be open to challenging each other, non-hierarchical, challenging, because we just want to understand. Because it doesn't seem like what was predictable in the past is predictable anymore. So we really just have to be gathering information all the time.
Mm. So what's your C?
Yeah. C for complexity is clarity. So that's all about communication. Right. And that's a little bit back to what we're talking about at the beginning of this episode, which is how can you be very clear about what the priorities are for the business?
Yeah.
Communicate them clearly and consistency to try to drown out some of the noise that's created from VUCA.
Yep. So we've got vision, understanding, clarity, and?
To get rid of ambiguity, it's agility.
Yeah.
So when you do get this, look for small data sets in this type of environment. I'm a data guy, so I like looking at large data sets. But at this point, waiting to get a year's worth of data might not be useful because the world is evolving much more quickly than that. So just look for little sources of wins, little sources of losses, and adapt. And so a company that holds on to the status quo a little bit too tightly is really going to struggle in a VUCA environment. But an organization that can be agile and move as we get more information, make small adjustments. That's how you lead
data
through this.
Sets. I really like that because, when people say data, they're usually thinking big data, big project.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's really interesting because some of the things you've said there could contradict each other.
Mm.
So I'm just thinking vision and agility. Well, it's moving around within that consistent North Star, isn't it?
Exactly. The path you take to get there. It's not going to be a straight line like we thought before VUCA.
Yeah.
So as you're getting little hints along the way, how do you have to correct course?
And where did you say this came from?
Institute for the Future. Mm. Someone named Robert Johansson.
Right. Interesting. So why don't we talk about your book, which you're not trying to sell?
But
I want to. I think the content of it was really interesting.
Mm.
So it's called A Member Is Worth 1,000 Visits.
A member's worth 1,000 visitors.
Visitors.
Yeah.
So tell me about, tell me, I mean, the theory of it is really interesting. So talk about that.
So I think a lot of companies get focused on, number of people that come to their website or number of people that come through their store, or number of leads that we talk to. And that's interesting, but it's also inefficient. And the key, and this is what I talk about in the book, is how do you figure out what your top 20% of customers really are?
Yeah.
So who are the ones? And you've all heard about the 80-20 rule, Pareto principle, 80% of your customers. It's really true. In fact, if you break it down, it's even more extreme.
Yeah.
Usually you're what I call the whales, your top 5% of your customers are half your business. Then the next 15% is
terrifying,
another 30%.
It's really scary.
And so forth.
Yeah.
So it's about really understanding your customers, their needs, their pain points, the job that you do for them, and breaking it down that way and focusing your sales, your marketing, your public relations efforts toward the customers that are most willing to buy, most willing to be loyal to your brand. And this becomes a flywheel because then they're also going to give you honest feedback and help you improve and help you expand.
Yes.
And stop wasting money on the people that will never buy, the people that, check the box, we had a sales conversation, check the box, someone came to our website.
Yeah.
But those aren't the metrics that matter.
Yes. Yeah, really interesting. So where does product development fit in with that then? Mm. So what if that whole idea between standard products versus bespoke, if you've got the trap with that top, five customers, is that then they start to really want bespoke. What's your thought about that?
Yeah, it depends on the nature of your business. So if you're kind of more of a mass market, you obviously can't have too much customization.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're smaller business, then yeah, you'll have to think about how to be a little bit more bespoke. But
yeah.
But I think you can look for patterns within your top, just because you have five top customers, you can figure out the, I'll call it the lookalike of those yeah. top five customers yeah. and go after them.
Yeah.
But you're right, I think, unless you're a boutique shop, it's tough to have extremely custom solutions for every single customer.
And
it's
people have really moved away from that, haven't they,
yeah,
in business?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so a lot. Really interesting background. And the international side. I love the small data. I think that's a really interesting thought. And the simplicity. So you were talking about bringing things from a looking at what are the leverage points from a business, but get to 3 to 5.
Yeah.
And then execute around those.
Yeah. One thing it gave me a little bit of PTSD on a role I took, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Where I asked for the dashboard of key metrics and was given a 13-page report. I mean, if you have that many metrics, you don't really have. It's too hard to manage.
So, yeah,
get it down to 3 to 5.
Yeah. Do you know when I first met you actually, and it was we'll put together what are the metrics, what are you doing? It felt too simple. It kind of I think for businesses this can feel like, am I doing enough work here?
Yeah.
Because it feels too simple.
Yeah.
But there's a beauty in the simplicity, isn't there, in strategy execution?
Yeah. And the part of the beauty is that view your metrics as your smoke detector, your fire alarm.
Yeah.
And then when one of your alarms goes off, then you can dig into the details and figure out the underlying 10 metrics. So don't feel like you can never look at any metrics besides these five.
Yeah.
But know that these five are the most important. And if one of these goes awry, then you double click, drill in, whatever.
Yeah.
Business term.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
So again, that's stuff you learned way back or you've developed over time?
Combination. I learned it. McKinsey is a great place to learn and start your career. Learned a lot there. Yeah. And I've mostly been focused on the middle market since then. So McKinsey was working with the largest companies in the world. And so over time, I've adapted some of the great things I learned through the McKinsey experience to be more relevant and applicable and implementable in the middle market.
Yeah, really interesting. So you're, in summary, for a mid-sized business owner here, anywhere in the world actually, outside the US, which is your world, and not for any other reason, what are the top tips for what you think people should be looking out for now?
What should people look out for now? I would say in the VUCA world specifically, don't panic.
Yeah.
Like think about your vision, think about how you can have... Look at small data and also tight feedback loops. So don't wait forever. When you see a little bit of data, don't wait to take action.
Yep.
Have short feedback loops as well. So I think just observe what's going on. Don't panic. See what's working. See what's not working. And we'll get through this.
That's good. Tight feedback loops. Just some really nice little gems in there. An interesting Vistage Live because we've kind of talked about Vistage. But I think it's been really relevant to what's going on in markets everywhere in your international view right now and where to from here. And I love finishing on a positive note. We'll get through this. That's great. Rob Rastagno, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Stephanie.
So that's it for Vistage Live today. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you subscribe so you can listen to us each episode. And for more information about Vistage, check us out on vistage.com.au.